This is the introduction.
Good afternoon. This is Tamara reading the Decatur Herald and Review. It's Wednesday, November 19th. We'll start with an article from the front page. From Valerie Wells in Decatur. Casting metals into careers. We have a photo of Brennan Davidson filling a flask with sand to make a tin cast during a workshop with the Foundry Education Foundation at the Andreas Ag Academy in Decatur on Monday, November 17th. Students learn about foundry work and Andreas Ag Academy. Brenda Davidson is only a senior in high school, but is already an accomplished blacksmith. "I got interested in metalworking and started blacksmithing at a pretty young age," he said. "I like coming here because I'm homeschooled and can interact with the other students here. I'm really interested in casting because it goes hand in hand with blacksmithing. So if you can blacksmith and cast, you can do anything, really." On Monday, students from Decatur visited the Andreas Ag Academy, where representatives from Decatur's three foundries, Mueller Company, Decatur Foundry Incorporated, and Nortrack, as well as the Foundry Education Foundation, introduced them to careers in foundries and let them have a go at making metal objects themselves. And while agriculture and metal casting might not seem to have anything in common at first glance, they actually overlap quite a bit. "There's a lot of jobs in that area," said Scott Davidson, one of the ag teachers. "Our kids don't get much experience or know what that is if we don't show that, so we're giving them a workshop to hopefully raise their awareness as to what kind of jobs are in our community, and to give them a little something to do as well. They'll get to actually make the molds and cast the tin, and they'll get to take it home." Students made things like keychains and spinning tops, and the tin they used is cast using lower temperatures than for other metals, making the activity less dangerous than it might be otherwise. They were under direct supervision while doing it. We have a photo of Robert Emery, a representative from Decatur Foundry Incorporated, looking at the result of tin sand casting with students at the Andreas Ag Academy in Decatur. "This is a great opportunity for our students," said Edwin Robinson, director of Teaching and Learning Secondary for Decatur Schools, who dropped in during the session held after school hours. "Students were informed about the event and could sign up if they had interest in the subject." "A lot of foundry work can be learned through on-the-job training," said Doug Hart, technical director of molding at Decatur Foundry, and he began his career right after high school, rising through the ranks as he became more accomplished. "There are good jobs out there," Hart said. "I came right out of high school and got a job there with just basic skills. I've been in the molding department 35 years. I learned enough to make a really good living. I'm married and have 8 kids, and I made a good enough living to support a wife and kids all these years." "Some jobs in the industry require post-secondary training," said Brad Curry, professor of engineering technology at Richland Community College, "and students can earn an associate's degree in that program, which will prepare them for a large number of jobs without needing to go on and get a bachelor's degree. However, some still want that too, and Richland has transfer agreements with area universities that offer that further training. There are 27 universities in North America with programs and scholarships available for students who qualify. With 90 foundries in Illinois, including the 3 major ones in Decatur, local students have plenty of choices for jobs in the field. Caden Washington, a freshman at MacArthur High School, wanted to attend the event because, like Brennan, he is interested in blacksmithing and metal casting. "I think it's a cool thing to do, and I've been looking into it and want to give it a try," he said. From Tony Reed in Decatur, City News, Council retains property tax rate. After cutting costs, city still $411,000 short in budget. Having stared into the fraught political abyss of asking increasingly strapped taxpayers for more money, the Decatur City Council voted instead Monday evening to tax less and cut costs. Council members adopted a budget ordinance at the meeting, which will hold the new property tax rate flat with the previous year. That will see the city's expected tax income sink by more than $1 million for a general fund that is set to spend $98.7 million to provide services in 2026. Instead of asking for more taxpayer cash, council members had asked their professional staff to take a scalpel to expenditures, slicing thinly there and deeper here to cut costs by more than $1.3 million to balance the books and pay obligations. Cuts ranged from nipping $40,000 from funding for police department drones to $435,000 from a vehicle acquisition program. Several council members said the fiscal SlimFast plan promises to be popular with their voters, and Monday's meeting included a public hearing on the city's 26 budget. But only one person spoke and asked for more surveillance cameras on city streets, among other issues. The council voted 7-0 to approve the ordinance for the 26 fiscal year budget, setting the stage for it to formally lock into place its flat tax levy, representing about 15% of the typical property tax bill at its December 1 meeting. But even when all the cutting and scraping for extra savings was said and done, however, the city coffers are forecast to still come up $411,000 short. Council members voted to take care of that issue by freeing up money from the city's general fund cash review. This was done by agreeing to cut the number of days the reserve has to cover from 90 to 75. Councilman David Horn was a bit worried about the principle of raiding the reserve, even though the city will still be left with some $26 million on hand in rainy day money to cover emergencies. "I do have some concerns about using cash reserves for general operating expenses," he said, saying the city had to try harder to live within its means. But Horn was also pleased that the city's chunk of property tax dollars will now be the lowest it's been for some 10 years. He says Macon County still has proportionally among the lowest property taxes rates in the nation, but he said the city had heard the will of its residents. He credited them with voicing their views to council members and pressuring them to ditch a previous plan to put a fiscal hand deeper into taxpayers' pockets. "And I just want to thank the many dozens of residents who have expressed their concerns about the city of Decatur's previous proposal to increase the amount of property taxes it collected by over $1 million," Horn added. "And it is truly thanks to the residents' advocacy that Decatur's proposed 26 budget now holds the amount of property taxes collected to be flat." Councilman Dennis Cooper was pleased too, thanking interim city manager Melissa Hahn and her team of number crunchers for making do with less, and Cooper even thought there was room for more cuts if needed. "I'm sure that there's still extra money out there in the departments that can be cut if necessary without cutting staff," he said. But even in the Garden of Eden there was a serpent, and some expenditure trends promise big future trouble ahead. A major issue that blew a hole in next year's flat property tax levy were jumps in police pension funding, $749,000, and firefighters' pension costs, an increase of $572,000. Councilman Pat McDaniel said, "Like it or not, Illinois is a state that funds much of its public services through property taxes, and the bills have to be paid." He said he was voting for the flat levy this time, but Decatur couldn't afford to make a habit of it. "We can't keep doing this," he told his colleagues. "You can bet next year our costs for us will also go up, and people still want the services. But there's only so much you can cut but still have the services, like the roads fixed and clean water. So I'll go along with it, the flat tax rate and cuts this year. But that's it." October keeps Decatur firefighters busy. Firefighters in Decatur had a busy month in October, according to numbers presented at Monday's City Council meeting. City Fire Chief Neil Elder reported that his crews saw 1,272 calls for service in October, maintaining a work rate he described as a steady pace consistent with recent months. Firefighters dealt with 31 blazes during the month, bumping up the year-to-date total to 295. "Overall, our current alarm volume continues to trend slightly ahead of the pace recorded in 24," Elder told council members in a written report. "The busiest fire department company in October was Engine 1, with 297 calls, and the second busiest was Engine 3, with 258. One bit of worrying news for the council members, who just got done cutting the budget, while holding down the city's share of the property tax rate, is some looming and expensive future equipment needs. Elder told them that the department's downtown-based ladder truck, bought in 2011, is approaching the end of its recommended service life, and it's time to start shopping for a new one. With current delivery timelines for new apparatus averaging 36 to 48 months, Truck 1 will be approximately 18 years old by the time a replacement arrives, and our reserve ladder truck will be nearly 23 years old, Elder warned them. National Fire Protection Association standards urge retiring frontline equipment after 15 years and taking them out of service altogether after 25 years, Elder said. This replacement cycle is therefore both necessary and strategically timed to maintain operational readiness, ensure firefighter safety, and support the long-term reliability of our fleet, the fire chief added. I anticipate bringing a finalized proposal to the council within the next few months. And the price tag for a shiny new ladder truck? The Herald and Review found estimates ranging from a low of $750,000 and heating up from there to a range of $1.5 million to more than $2 million depending on specifications and capabilities. And from the Decatur Police Department, city cops tally 4,000 calls for service. From traffic citations to criminal arrests, the Decatur Police Department was kept on its toes in October. A monthly activity report presented by Acting Police Chief Ed Hurst showed 4,211 calls for service, bringing the year-to-date tally to 43,147. October saw police make 436 criminal arrests, 3,715 for the year so far, along with 25 felony drug arrests for the month, adding up to 267 so far in 2025. Officers seized 23 firearms and responded to 190 traffic accidents that included one fatality and 36 personal injury crashes. Patrol officers wrote 545 traffic citations in October, bringing the year's total to 5,875. They also issued 316 written warnings during the month, 3,690 for the year, and 408 parking citations, 3,964 for the year. October saw the seizure of a total of 1 pound, 4 ounces of drugs, ranging from cannabis to cocaine, heroin, and methamphetamine. That adds up to a year-to-date weight for all of those drugs of almost 17 pounds, with a combined street value of close to $375,000. Officers also seized more than $24,000 in cash for a year-to-date total of $49,975. Hearst reported that detectives were assigned 205 new cases in October while closing or resolving 112 cases. Total new cases assigned year-to-date stands at 1,670, while the tally of closed or resolved cases hit 1,064. Detectives investigated one homicide, year's total is 6, and 3 suicides, 10 for the year. The total number of sworn officers stands at 139 on the force, compared to an authorized full roster of 148. The police department has 15 civilian employees. Our last article from the front page, from Will Foley in Decatur, Prospect League. New baseball team on track for Decatur. Decatur's newest baseball team is officially on its way. Golden Rule Entertainment, in partnership with Millikan University and the City of Decatur, held a press conference Tuesday morning to announce a new Prospect League team. The team will play at Millikan's Workman Field. The Prospect League has been interested in Decatur for years, co-owner and Golden Rule Entertainment representative Jamie Toole said. Baseball's our platform, not our purpose. Our purpose is to bring people together, make our communities better, and be a part of the community 365. The idea of expansion to Decatur was first formulated in 2019, though talks eventually fell apart. Once the recent proposal was approved, the original plan was for the Decatur's team to debut in 2027. However, expansion in Kokomo, announced in October, would have created scheduling conflicts with 19 teams, meaning the debut date had to be moved up. The move required a unified vision between Golden Rule Entertainment, Millikan, and the City of Decatur. Toole, Millikan President Dean Pribinow, and baseball coach assistant athletic director Brandon Townsend, along with Decatur Mayor Julie Moore Wolf, were integral to the process. Decatur is a baseball town. We have a long, rich history of being baseball fans and embracing those teams in this community, Wolf said. For this community, this is a huge deal, because this is family entertainment that is affordable. Here's information to know about why all sides agreed on Decatur as a landing spot, the next steps in the process, and what to expect next summer. The most prominent message sent across by all parties is what the Decatur Baseball Club will do for the community. While the development of the players will eventually be a focus area, the community comes first. Toole, who is also co-owner of fellow Prospect League organizations in the Springfield Lucky Horseshoes and Quincy Doggy Paddlers, cited charity fundraisers, local promotions, and the entertainment aspect as priorities. Those are the important things, Toole said. Wins and losses will happen. Events that Toole implemented in Springfield, which could be replicated in Decatur, include toy drives, jersey auctions, ticket discounts, and volunteer groups. He also highlighted how the club can help make a positive impact on Decatur's economy. Toole said the group has already applied to host a league meeting in Decatur, then cited earnings from hotels and local vendors. He pointed to a partnership with local craft beers as a likely outcome. It's hard to envision a baseball team without one to reference yet, so what are the next steps in making that happen? First, the club has to establish an identity, Toole said. DecaturBaseball.com should be launching Tuesday, and fan input for a team name is not only appreciated but encouraged. It's super important that the community names the team, Toole said. There's so many fun, cool things about this community, and let's get creative, right? He said the team name should be narrowed down and announced around Valentine's Day, and also revealed season tickets will soon go on sale on the same website. As for the team makeup, he confirmed that some Millican players will be rostered, but other than that, the team is waiting on the Prospect League to send contracts of the amateur players. Toole said teams generally try to go heavily local with collegiate players, and that will be in effect in Decatur, though they can be from all over the country. A program will be launched for host families. As for player development, Toole and the ownership group want to bring in skilled, talented players that leave better than they were, but also has more insight for what they can accomplish. We're more interested in creating major league human beings, Toole said. That's what's most important. The next team-related event scheduled is February 4th, when Chicago Cubs play-by-play announcer Pat Hughes will come to Decatur for a social event. From our opinion page, cannabis coverage. Health insurance is next logical step for marijuana. From Mikhail Kogan, an associate professor of medicine and chief medical officer of the Center for Integrative Medicine at George Washington University. He is co-author of Medical Marijuana, Dr. Kogan's Evidence-Based Guide to the Health Benefits of Cannabis and CBD. He wrote this for Inside Sources. I've spent my career caring for patients with chronic pain, dementia, and other conditions that drain the quality of people's lives and the resources of our healthcare system. Too often, I've prescribed medications that are costly and dangerous, carrying high risks of dependency and death. Many of my patients already use another option, medical cannabis. The plant is one of the most effective and safest treatments for a host of chronic conditions. Yet many patients must choose between paying rent or paying out of pocket for cannabis because insurance companies refuse to cover it. Insurance coverage for medical cannabis is not a radical idea, it is the next logical step. Together, the epidemics of chronic pain and dementia consume a staggering share of Medicare and Medicaid budgets. They also drive patients toward the drugs, fueling our overdose crisis. Cannabis can be an exit strategy. A study by New York State and CUNY researchers found 30-50% reductions in opioid use when patients substitute with cannabis. Like opioids or benzodiazepines, cannabis has no recorded overdose deaths. Broader adoption could save tens of thousands of lives annually. For patients with dementia, cannabis can improve sleep, appetite, mood, and agitation symptoms, often allowing them to reduce or stop medications that have debilitating side effects. The oft-heard claim that cannabis lacks data is outdated. a comprehensive research review by the National Academies of Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine in 2017, classified cannabis as an evidence-based treatment for chronic pain, multiple sclerosis, and chemotherapy-related nausea. Research has expanded since then, with international models from Israel to Canada demonstrating measurable benefits and cost savings. We also have growing patient-reported outcomes, structured data gathered directly from people using cannabis. These outcomes capture what clinical trials often miss: improvements in daily functioning, sleep, mood, and quality of life. Federal agencies are stuck in a catch-22. The Food and Drug Administration cannot approve cannabis because products vary batch to batch. Yet without FDA approval, insurers won't cover it. Patients are left to rely on advice from poorly trained dispensary staff, pursue an unsupported trial-and-error approach, or go without. Hospice programs provide a model for covering cannabis. They receive a daily payment from Medicare to cover all palliative needs. Integrative pain programs, such as those offered at University of Vermont, are another example. They often are approved for insurance reimbursement and have been shown to yield significant savings. We should explore Medicaid waivers to allow cannabis coverage for chronic pain, anxiety, and substance use disorder. Critics argue that cannabis is unsafer, that coverage would invite abuse. Most of those claims are based on recreational smoking and not carefully dosed cannabis for medical use. Cannabis is not appropriate for adolescents, but for adults, especially older adults, the benefits often far outweigh the risks. Financial cost is another consideration. By reducing emergency room visits, imaging, physician appointments, and dangerous drug interactions, insurance coverage would save money. Insurers are already paying for the consequences of chronic pain and dementia. Covering cannabis is in their financial interest. Nearly 75% of U.S. adults live in states with legal cannabis access. We know cannabis works for many conditions. We know it's safer than most alternatives. The data is growing and patients are demanding it. What we lack is political will. As a physician, I cannot ignore treatments my patients are already using and benefiting from. Insurance companies should not ignore them either. Covering medical cannabis is logical, ethical, and necessary, and it will save lives. Now from nutritionist Barbara Intermill, surviving cancer. A few months ago, I was privileged to speak at an event celebrating cancer survivors. As I prepared, I realized that I too am in that special group. At a routine visit in 21, I asked my dermatologist to take a look at a spot on my shoulder. To my relief, she reassured me it was nothing of concern. "I do want to take a closer look at this one, though," she said, referring to a tiny spot on my back that I wouldn't have otherwise seen. The biopsy report confirmed her suspicions. It was melanoma, the most aggressive form of skin cancer. Fortunately, we caught it early, and I was immediately scheduled to have the area around the site surgically removed. To say I am thankful is an understatement. Cancer is characterized by uncontrolled growth and spread of abnormal cells in the body. According to the National Cancer Institute, cancer.gov, approximately 38.9% of men and women will be diagnosed with some type of cancer during their lifetime. The good news, up to 70% of cancer patients survive 5 or more years after being diagnosed. Some cancers are related to our genetics, what we inherit from our parents. Others are connected to the environment in which we live, as well as our lifestyle, which includes our diet choices. In fact, the old adage, "genetic loads the gun, but lifestyle pulls the trigger," is certainly true with cancer. According to a 2020 article in the journal Cancers, one critical factor that may influence the development and spread of cancer is damage to our genetic DNA. What nutrients are involved in DNA repair? Zinc, found in Pacific oysters, lean meat, seafood, poultry, and lentils, selenium, provided by Brazil nuts, tuna, sardines, shrimp, lean meats, poultry and fish, and folate in foods such as leafy green vegetables, dried beans, and peas. Scientists have also identified substances in cruciferous vegetables that activate specific genes shown to suppress the growth of cancer cells. This specialized group of plants includes broccoli, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, and cabbage, as well as kale, arugula, bok choy, turnips, collard, and mustard greens. And don't forget to make your plate as colorful as possible. Each pigment in fruits, vegetables, and other plant-based foods represents a unique phytochemical, many of which are known to target and interfere with the development and spread of cancer cells. In my case, I was extremely grateful for the medical team that was able to remove the abnormal growth from my body. And while nutrition is not a cure-all for cancer, it's exciting that researchers have identified a number of dietary components that may help inhibit or slow the progression of this disease. The effects of the foods we choose have potential to influence our health all along the cancer path, from prevention to treatment to survival. And now, hints from Heloise. Dear Heloise, one serious point about trying to replicate the wide plank floors of early American homes. The wood that you can obtain at a semi-reasonable cost is not the same as the antique stuff. It is of a different quality. It is wetter, as it is not well seasoned, and often an entirely different species. Wide boards will be more apt to shrink and or warp. I grew up in some older homes with lovely oak wooden floors that were polished to a treat, as my grandmother would have said. I have several family members and friends who are very happy with the newer, not as expensive composition flooring that is available now. It looks very authentic, but does require more careful use. You cannot sand out scratches or marks. Most have tile in the high entry, gritty areas such as entryways. Pan from Arizona. Pan, I have been in some very old early American homes on the East Coast, and there is a beautiful charm to them. The early settlers cut down trees that had been growing for centuries. Today, most of these old trees are gone, except for ones that are protected by state laws and by people who value the beauty of these old, deeply rooted trees. Tucking in shirts. Dear Heloise, in reply to the inquiry of why women tuck part of their shirts into the front of their pants, my reason for doing so is to prevent my belt or the closure on my jeans from creating a hole in my t-shirts or other tops. My waist appears to be at the same level as my top, and if I don't tuck shirts in the front of my pants, an automatic hole appears almost immediately. So annoying. Cindy from Kenosha, Wisconsin. Cindy, this is merely a brief fashion trend that will one day be gone, just like bouffant hairdos, bell-bottom jeans, and sit-ins. One day we will all look back and wonder, what was I thinking when we wore something? I cringe every time I see myself in photographs wearing wide shoulder pads in the 80s that made me look like a linebacker. Percale Sheets. Dear Heloise, I've been reading your and your mother's column for many years in the Colorado Springs Gazette, but I've never seen this problem addressed. It may not even be a problem for most readers, but it sure is for me. I buy very good percale sheets for our beds, but no matter what, the edges of the top sheet always curl in and leave a permanent crease that cannot be ironed away. I like my top sheet, especially the top where it folds over the blanket, to be smooth. I do iron it to no avail. Is there anything else I can do? Thank you. Doris in Colorado Springs, Colorado. Doris, the manufacturers recommend this. Take a dry bed sheet and place it in the dryer with a wet cloth for about 15 to 20 minutes. While the sheet is damp, use an iron on low heat setting and iron the area that had the crease. If any of my readers have a suggestion that's worked for them, we'd love to hear from you at Heloise@Heloise.com. Let us know that you did what you did to solve this problem or one like it. From Decatur, Aetna Better Health of Illinois is holding a Giving Thanks for Your Health resource fair in Decatur. The event is set for 8:30 to 11 a.m. Thursday, November 20th, at the Macon County Health Department, 1221 East Condit Street. In addition to essential wellness resources, screenings, and support services, Aetna is providing free bags of fresh produce. The City of Decatur is accepting pre-applications for a roof replacement program offered by the Illinois Housing Development Authority in the form of a 3-year forgivable loan with a 0% interest rate and no monthly payment. Eligible homeowners may receive up to $25,000 for repairs. Pre-applications will be accepted through 5 p.m. Friday, November 21st, processed on a first-come, first-served basis. Eligible homeowners must be at or below 80% area median income for their household size, current on their mortgage, and own a single-family home in need of roof replacement, among other requirements. Call 217-424-2797 for more information. We'll take a short break now and return with Decatur Herald and Review for Wednesday, November 19th. Please stay tuned.